something about being home, where everything's just right. We're surrounded by people we love and trust. There's a feeling of stability and safety.
And while some people get to experience this kind of home, many do not. Others might even be forced to leave their home and go live in a foreign land. We call this going into exile.
Yeah, in exile, everything is disoriented. You're in the unknown.
And in the story of the Bible, this is where the ancient Israelites found themselves, conquered by Babylon, living in exile, far from their homeland.
And so they had asked themselves, how did we end up here? And is there any hope of going home?
And the whole story of the Bible is designed to address those very questions.
The whole story? Really?
Yeah, go back to the first pages of the Bible. Where does humanity live?
Okay, they live in this really sweet garden, their home.
And they're there on one condition, that they trust and follow God's one command, and they don't. And so the consequence is banishment from the garden.
Ah, they're sent into exile.
Exactly. And so this story has been designed to set you up for Israel's story. How they were given the gift of the promised land and were able to stay there on one condition, that they be faithful to the terms of their covenant relationship with God.
They didn't, and they were sent into exile.
And if you still don't see the parallel between exile from the garden and exile from Israel, think about this. In Genesis, humanity's exile led up to the story about the building of what city?
Oh yeah, Babylon. The same place the Israelites are sent.
But that's not the end of either story. In the first Babylon, God called Abraham to leave and travel to the Promised Land. And that story was designed to give hope to the Israelites currently living in the later Babylon.
Now eventually, they do get to leave and travel back to their promised homeland.
And when they did, it wasn't home sweet home. Oppressive empires were still ruling over them, and the people kept acting in the same corrupt ways as their ancestors. And so the biblical prophets said that exile wasn't actually over.
How could they think they were still in exile when they're at home?
Yeah, this is really important. In the Hebrew scriptures, Israel's Babylonian exile became an image of something more universal. It's that feeling of alienation and longing for something more, no matter where you live.
Yeah, I can relate to this. I have a great home, but it's situated in a world scarred with pain and broken relationships, death, tragedy, done by others, but also done by me.
And so in the Bible, exile is the human condition. We all keep repeating this pattern of human corruption leading to a Babylon that we can't escape. And it doesn't matter where you live, we are all longing for a better home.
Now, Israel's scriptures held out hope that one day God would send a king who would rescue the world from all of the Babylons we've created.
And after many generations pass, we meet this Israelite named Jesus of Nazareth. He wandered about with no home, announcing the great restoration, that reality of home that Israel and all humanity has been looking for.
Yeah, Jesus really cared about people who didn't have homes. He welcomed in the stranger. He said God's love is shown when you invite in the outcast and throw parties for people who don't have a place to belong.
Jesus also claimed that Israel and all humanity had lost its way, that our self-centeredness drives us to create false homes based on status and power, and these inevitably exclude others. We live in an exile of our own making. But Jesus said the true way home is one of weakness, of service, and of forgiveness. And then Jesus went into exile alongside us to show us the true way home.
Which is?
Well, Jesus said he is the way. His life and self-giving love proved more powerful than humanity's failure. He opened up a pathway to our real home. And as Jesus' followers committed themselves to him, they discovered this new way of being human. They believed that the real return from exile had begun. And so they would call themselves sojourners or wanderers.
Oh, right. They would say things like, the world isn't our home, and we're citizens of heaven.
And so Jesus' followers remain exiles as they wait for that day when Jesus returns to transform this world into a true home.
Awesome. If you have your Bibles, turn to 1 Peter. I'm going to be in 1 Peter and kind of navigating throughout it. And real quick disclaimer for those that are online, those that are gathered here. There's a lot of text, a lot of ground to cover. And all the very, small specific things, we're not going to dive super far into those. What we're going to go here today is the general compass of what Peter is talking about to these exiles, to these sojourners, these wanderers. And then from there for you to figure out where is it that you lie in the midst of that. And so I encourage you at the end of this message or at some time this week, reflect on the passages that we go through and find for yourself what rubs you the wrong way, what is it that you might struggle through, what you might struggle with, and that you can work through it for yourself, for your family, and for those around you. As you notice, we started off with a video, and I just thought that was a great video to remind us of all that we went through last week from the passage Jeremiah 29, 1 through 7. So a quick recap of what exile is. Remember, it's this bad word that is meant to be, like, very not good. We talked about how, like, the exit sign is the way out. For Israelites, exile is the uprooting of everything that you know from culture, family, everything that was once good and bad is just uprooted and taken somewhere else and probably placed by someone else that doesn't deserve it, doesn't do it justice, doesn't serve it well. But for Israel, as we read in Jeremiah chapter 29, verses 1 through 7, it becomes a message of hope. That this is actually something that brings hope to people that are lost and wanderers. And it's something that everyone can relate to. And just like the video said, is that no matter where you live, no matter what you go through in life, no matter how perfect you think you set up everything around you, that we are always longing for a better home. Where no one has to at least push your boundaries or make you upset, or that you can just be who God made you to be and live the way God made you to live. And as believers, as Christians, we believe that Jesus is the one that paved this way for us to follow. He was the example where we could not go. He made a way so that we could see how to live as not only exiles, but as chosen people by God to live the way he made us to live. And so before we go further, for those that are here that are followers of Jesus, that you have made a commitment to surrender your life, that you are a follower of Jesus, and those online as well, that you too, you are an exile, an immigrant, a stranger, wandering the world for the rest of your life. And yet, as we learned last week, that at the same time is a message of hope for all people. And that's why we follow Jesus. Because Jesus knows exactly what it's like to be an exile, to be literally exiled from your own people, from your own family, and to be hung on a cross, a place that is a foreign land, a place that he should not be. He knows exactly what exile looks like, but he did that while proclaiming the kingdom of heaven, that it will come to earth, that it has arrived, and that he brings people that were once dead in their trespasses, and he brings them new life. This exile all of a sudden becomes a message of hope. It flips it upside down. So why are we here? We're talking about living exile. What's the living part? We learned what exile means, but what does the living part say? It's, like I said last week, this is addressing some of the elephant in the room, not only through the global pandemic. Can you believe it? It's earlier this month, there was an election that happened, something like that, and I don't know. It wasn't like it was a big deal or anything. Yeah, that took place earlier this month. It felt like super a long time ago. There's chaos amongst the nation for a lot of different reasons. There's a new president-elect. And listen, the world, for so many different reasons, and especially in the United States, that there has always been stuff to be divisive on. It is always divided. I wouldn't be naive to say that this is the most divided we've ever been. There's always been division for a bunch of different things. But also with so many things that we come in contact with, that we have access to information faster than we have ever had it before. That is a fact, and that is true. And so our brains are feeding off of this stuff. Our conversation with people don't look the same anymore. Because our brains are feeding off of stuff that really doesn't necessarily affect us right here, right now in Olton, Texas. It's like an everlasting gobstopper. We just want more stuff to talk about stuff because it's almost like we try to not talk about our own personal stuff. We want to talk about someone else's issues that go on. And listen, in the midst of all this craziness, of all the stuff that our brain feeds off through media, through social media, through conversations that we have about things that involve these things, listen, that's where Satan thrives. That's where Satan thrives in the midst of all that, and he begins to start manipulating stuff. Satan begins to twist things little by little. And it's when we believe that divide that we have an issue. When we forget that Jesus died for those that were far from God, for the ungodly, for those that are made in his image, that we can't fall into the trap of believing that divide. And one of the struggles that David and I, as we talk through in the direction of the church, in many cases, if we're not careful, that even the church here in Alton, even the church here in Alton can look no different than the struggle that the rest of the world faces, this divide, if you will. And yet we expect God to be proud of us. Like, look at the accomplishments that we've made. Look what we've done. Look at the things that I have defended. And we expect God to be proud of us, but all while we're neglecting those that are right next to us. If we're not careful, we neglect those that are around us. And we talk about things that we feel that we put this weight on that is just not true. We become more worried about policies, politicians, and things, situations, how to run this pandemic, how this will take place. We're more worried about that between people that have no idea who you are, people that are making decisions that have no idea who you are. And so for many people, this is a time of can be a time of panic, whether it's through the pandemic or if you believe the election has affected you in a certain way. But let me say this, and I just want to make this clear. This is a general statement overall, that there is nothing that has happened in this world that has made God say, man, hey, angels, we need to bust in plan B. We need to have a consultation prize. We need to settle for things to make things different because I did not expect this to happen. That's not what God is saying, and that's not what God is doing. He's not freaking out. He's not changing. He's still on the throne, and he's still calling those that are far from God, that he is calling them into his possession, his prized possession for himself. And he's still redeeming people through the saving grace of the good news of Jesus. And we need to be reminded, who is it that we actually are as believers here in our location currently? And what is it that we are working towards? And listen, we know this, we are exiles. No matter how much comfort or how much we place things to make things look good all around us, we are foreigners in a foreign land. And also, no matter how bad things get, or however we think things get here in society or whatever, we have a long way to go. Listen to what I have to say. We have a long way to go before we look anything like the Roman Empire. Between feeding people to animals by the government, offering pagan sacrifices to unknown gods, worshiping Caesar as Lord, which is a cultural mandate for all people, we have a long way to go before then. And so in 1 Peter, this is Peter writing, so this is the guy that he walked on water, that he also said that Jesus is Lord. So really good things that we attribute to Peter, but he's also the guy that denied Peter 3 times, all in a span of 3 to 4 years. You know, this guy's crazy. But he writes this passage now that he was part of Jesus' close circle of friends. And so now he was called to be a leader in the church to help start the church and what's going on. We can read that through Acts and all the things that happened there. And he writes this letter to the people in Asia Minor, which is modern-day Turkey, and he's writing to encourage them in the suffering that takes place because of their oppression over the Roman government, Roman officials. And not only are people feeling like they're exiles in the land that they're in, but also as a follower of Jesus, they're like, wait, no, we're always an exile. We're constantly trying to love people, and they're not loving us back, and it's weird. We feel like we're in a foreign land. And this is where Peter starts with. He wants to identify these things for them. He says this in verse 1, to God's chosen strangers in the world. Your version might say exiles. Your version might say immigrants. Strangers in the world. They are exiles in the world. This is how Peter chooses to identify his people. If you want something that starts off encouraging, hey, wanderers. Yeah, I'm talking to you guys. Those that are in Jesus, yeah, you're wanderers. He's identifying them through this exile theme that we're going through, living in exile. And what he's doing is he's having a callback to these people. He's calling them this chosen people. He's not talking to Jewish people, that in Old Testament God chose the Jewish people to lead where eventually Jesus comes through to redeem and save all humanity. What he's saying is that those that are not Jewish, that they receive this inheritance, that they are part of this chosen people by God, that through Jesus that he redeems all of humanity. And he's talking to these people, and he's addressing them in their great suffering that they've been through. He's addressing them and knowing, like, hey, like, this isn't easy. Following Jesus is difficult, not only socially, but even personally and privately in your family. Things are different about you. People that were once lost, people that were doing things that they thought there is no hope for this person at all, are now being transformed by the life-saving power of the gospel. And he's addressing their sufferings, and Peter writes to encourage them through the first chapter. He calls them holy people that are in the wilderness, just like Israel. He calls them the new Exodus, these new people that wandered out of their exile into the promised land, but they're just like Israel. And all these other weird terms like the new temple. He talks through this through the first chapter. And then he also identifies them as the kingdom of priests. And this is one of my favorite passages to talk about God's people. It says in chapter 2, verse 9 through 10, "But you're a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God, and once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy." If you want to be identified by one of Jesus' closest followers in his inner circle of people, and he identifies you as this, that's a big compliment. That's pretty awesome. And he reminds them of their identity, that they are marked by the Holy Spirit, that they are God's treasured possession. Everything that Peter is saying here, this is a direct echo of what God spoke to the Israelites through Moses. You can read that in Exodus itself. They are God's treasured people, that they're strangers, foreigners, that they're exiles. But something about being identified as this. I'm sorry. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 11 says this. It says, "Dear friends, I urge you, as foreigners and exiles, to abstain from sinful desires which wage war against your soul." So what I was saying is something about being identified as this. Something about being identified as exiles, as followers of Jesus, that there is this, that means that there's this urge to abstain, or there's a call to abstain from the sinful desires. Now, typically, when we encounter a text like this that says abstain from sinful desires, typically the things that we kind of pick up on just through, you know, other texts that we've seen or maybe that we assume is we think of like, okay, like abstain from sexual immorality, don't give into the flesh, don't do obvious things that wouldn't help your walk with Jesus. Obviously, don't do those things. And what I mean by obviously is things that maybe we simplify as Christians to say is like, well, you know, as a Christian, we just don't do this and we do these things and we do some of this stuff or whatever. But listen, that is not what Peter's talking about here. That's not what Peter's trying to get at, or these moral things that we're trying to correct or whatever. And what the Greek actually does with this, it's actually making a phrase of natural desires, things that we naturally do as people. So they're natural impulses, simple desires, that there are natural impulses for this. Let me give you an example. Let's just say whether you're at work or you have a family member or maybe someone at school, and someone accuses you of doing something wrong, that you messed up, that you did something bad, and actually affected other people. But actually, when you look back on it, that you didn't do anything wrong, it was just maybe a misunderstanding. And actually, people are coming to you now, it's like, dude, why did you do that? Or why did you say that? Or why did that take place? Chances are you'd probably be furious, right? You'd probably freak out, like, no, I didn't, this is a misunderstanding. I did everything right. Doesn't matter what the situation is, I did everything right. And there's a misunderstanding, it's not my fault. And you get this defensive urge for you. Listen, that's the natural impulses that we have. It's impulses that cause us to self-preserve. I need to either convince people what actually happened, or you need everyone to know that you're innocent. Natural impulses that we have. That's what Peter is talking about here. And something about our natural impulses cause us to wage war. The way the scripture says it, causes us to wage war against our soul. And this word soul, just to clarify real quick, this is not just like a, you know, whenever you die, like a ghost comes out of your body and it flies up to the sky. Like, that's not what Peter's addressing here. What the soul is that the word is psyches. It's where we get the word psyche from. And actually, the soul has more to do with what goes on in our mind and through our actions. An example is in Mark chapter 8, verse 35. Whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their psyches, their soul, their life for me, for the gospel, will save it. And what good is it for someone to gain the whole world yet to forfeit their life, their soul, their psyches? Okay, what is it that Peter is getting at here back in 1 Peter? He's just trying to get at what is it that your life reflects. Peter's talking about the struggle of not living your life by your natural impulses. Get this. He's not talking about living by your natural impulses, but because of Jesus, listen, you have new ones. You have a new operating system. You have a new way of living in the world. You have a new way that people see you. And he goes into this in verse 12 of 2 Peter. Living such good lives among the pagans, that though they accuse you of doing wrong, that they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. So when I was kind of going through this and reading through and wrestling with some of these texts, it's really hard not to see Peter as like, okay, make sure you put out the, you know, it's like kind of at the grocery store where you put the good fruit on the front so that people get the good stuff. It's really hard to not see that, but that's not what Peter's saying. He's not saying put your best self forward that other people can see, but if they don't see other stuff, just don't let them see the bad side. That's not what Peter's saying here. He's modeling what Jesus called these people. They're not doing it for their glory, but they're modeling stuff so that God, people can see God within them. Matthew chapter 5, verse 16 says, in the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. So Peter's motive for good works here and good contact, good conduct is strictly for those to see God working in you. That no matter what culture you live in, no matter what matters to you or whether you're a follower of Jesus or not, people can recognize what is good, good actions, good deeds. Hey, like, you know, you help someone out today or whatever. Maybe put it this way. Someone that I think that does this really well, that has always done this really well, and that people even still talk about even years from now, someone that does good deeds that doesn't matter what culture you're in, they recognize it as good. I can't help but think of someone like Fred Rogers. You know, here's a quick picture of him for kids that don't know who he is. Man, you want to talk about a guy who attracted people that were far from God? It was this guy. There's people that still talk about him to this day. People that don't follow Jesus say, yeah, I don't know whatever this is, but that Fred Rogers guy, that guy is doing something right. He's doing something right. People that aren't Christians, they love this guy. They love this dude. And he didn't have this agenda, like at the end of his shows, to say, hey, like if you want to be a follower of Jesus, you know, you can commit your life here. No. All he wanted to do was follow Jesus, and by doing so, he cared about people who are made in the image of God to make good decisions and to love their neighbor. There's no agenda here. He didn't have an agenda to try to transform people. He was just saying, no, love people. Love people. Make good choices. It's like that simple childlike faith that is almost kind of seems naive, but as adults, sometimes we kind of like push that down, like, no, it's not that simple. It's like, well, it is that simple. And it attracts people, and it's why people listen to the messages that he would bring. It's really hard to put someone down when they're constantly loving you the way God loves you. And it's also really hard to act on your natural impulses. It's hard to act in the flesh when you're constantly running to God about, God, I have this struggle, I have these issues going on. But instead, we adopt the way of following Jesus as Jesus followers. We have examples of people in the faith that do that, that live it out. And then the next thing in that passage that Peter transitions to is he talks about God's visitation, which we're going to talk about later at the end of this. But here's the big chunk of the letter that we're going to work through real quick, and then we're going to close out here. And it's verse 13 through 17. This is the heart of the message of what we're talking through. Because he goes from identifying these people as strangers, as wanderers, but he's also giving them a way of living in exile. And after this, he's going to talk about a bunch of other stuff. But specifically here, he's talking about, well, we'll just read it. Verse 13. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor as the supreme authority or to the governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. For it is God's will that by doing good, you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. Live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for that evil. Live as God's slaves. Show proper respect to everyone. Love the family of believers. Fear God. Honor the emperor. So what is it that Peter is going off on here? What is it that Peter's trying? Whose leg is he pulling? What bet did he lose? Like, what's... I hope you can see, like, in the midst of this, the naiveness of the culture that Peter is talking to. We're not talking about the United States. We're not talking about here now. I'm talking about in the central of Roman occupation. People forced to believe that to say Caesar is Lord. Peter's addressing these people, and he's like saying, yeah, do that. I hope you see the naiveness. He says, show proper respect to everyone. Love the family of believers. Fear God. Honor the emperor. Does Peter not understand all that's going on? Like, all that's taking place here? The type of oppression these people have had to live through? These exiles who live under Roman oppression? And isn't this way of living, isn't it a direct conflict with what God has called us to do? Like, isn't this not what we're supposed to do? Listen, Christians, they weren't persecuted, they weren't killed because they were saying, hey, love your neighbors, serve the poor. They weren't killed for those reasons or persecuted for those reasons. They were accused for those reasons because you have Roman centurions, Roman guards, high in ranking, submitting to the lordship of Jesus. That's why they're persecuted. Not because they're saying like these things, but because they're challenging things that where Rome is like, listen, there's a large following of people that are submitting to this new way of being like Jesus. And I don't like it. It makes me uncomfortable. And even encounters that Jesus, something that's crazy, even in like the book of Mark, everyone throughout Mark's gospel, people are like, well, who are you? Who is this Jesus? And the first person that acknowledges Jesus as Lord, that is not part of Jesus' close circle, is that Roman centurion, that surely this is the Son of God after he's crucified on the cross. How do you think that plays out in court? How do you think that plays out in social parameters? It doesn't hold up well. It doesn't look pretty for a lot of these people. But what Peter is saying here, friends, is he's flipping the tables on the way they live in exile. He's flipping the tables on how they operate. Instead of giving into their natural impulses, their natural desires, that they give into the way of who Jesus is. That living in exile, it's not easy. But as the video that we saw, that this exile, it's a condition of our hearts, and that's what takes us far from God, that leads us far from God. And so from this text, what I want us to see is that there's a pattern that God has always done through the Scriptures, and we read it last week in Jeremiah, and we read it this week. Last week, remember we talked about how the Israelites are told to settle in exile. And Peter, they're told to submit to Rome. That's the big deal here. There's no curtains. That's what he's saying here. Submit to those that are in authority. And the one question reading through this is that I have, and maybe you have, is, but isn't this compromised faith? Isn't this something we're like, okay, I submit to that, but also Jesus is Lord? Like when do I take a stand for Jesus? Are you with me here? When do I take a stand for Jesus? When am I supposed to defend him? When am I supposed to make him the leader of our city or state or country? How do we make this again, Roman occupation? How do we make this into a Christian nation? What does that even look like? How do we do that? And the first thing that I have to say to that is that Jesus doesn't need your defending. Jesus doesn't need you to defend him. And God doesn't need you to fight for him. What has happened is that in the way of exile, there's typically two routes that people take. You either adopt the culture and you become, you know, a person that's a regular citizen, and you submit to, you know, the Roman authority, the Roman gods, you submit to Caesar, all these things, and you just adopt everything to yourself. But then the other way that has happened is that you feel the need to rebel. Like, no, no, this isn't right, or I need to go against that, or I need to defend what I think is right. But actually, there's the third way. And the third way is, it seems so simple. And remember, this is the naiveness that we can see in Peter, but actually there's some great truth to this. Show proper respect to everyone. Love the family of believers. Fear God. Honor the emperor. And as followers of Jesus, and David has talked through this for several weeks when we were talking about unity and reset, and even through 1 Corinthians, is that the thing about being a follower of Jesus is that you actually surrender whatever rights that you have because of who Jesus is, that you surrender those rights so that others can see Jesus through your actions, that you're actually not entitled to anything. And how do people see Jesus in you when you act that way? Anytime that you go against your natural impulses, the sinful desires, the natural way that we operate, anytime that you go against it, that is how people see Jesus in you. And the last thing here is that there's a warning here as well. There's also a very strict and kind of a dark warning that takes place here in verse 16. Get this. Live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as God's slaves. And the scary thing here is that you can even be a follower of Jesus, someone that surrendered their life to Jesus, but miss the point, and that you end up being trapped in this way of exile of these natural impulses. And sometimes we can forget what God called us to do, that other people are made in God's image. We end up doing things that don't look Christ-like. We say things to friends and family and maybe even people that we don't like, that people that think differently than us, or even people that we don't know, we just categorize as those are the other people. And whenever we talk around people that we trust, that we slander them. We forget that they're made in the image of God. We feel far from God. And sometimes that we feel lost. That exile maybe feels very prevalent. I just want to be honest with you guys. And I don't know, I kind of felt like this week and even throughout this year. And maybe you have too. But sometimes we just feel like, man, like I know. And maybe you can resonate with this, that I know that I am saved by the power of Jesus because he rose from the dead. I know that through the gospel that I have been rescued from my own impulses, my desires. But listen, there's sometimes where I still feel far from God. There's sometimes where I feel like, man, God, where are you in the midst of all this? I just want to be real with that. And maybe this week or at some point that you said things that you wish you didn't say, whether to your kids, to a friend, your spouse, stuff that you didn't mean, things that we can confess that aren't the Christ-like things that we're called to do. And it's a struggle. The way you live as exiles is live as God's kingdom has come to earth. And that's why Peter talks about God's visitation when Jesus comes back. You don't need to defend the kingdom. You don't need to defend the things that Jesus has already rescued and died for. God doesn't need you to take a stand, but what he does want from his people, the one thing that God does ask, he wants people of authentic faith that live out the transformed lives. People that are more proud of their citizenship of heaven over anything else. And all that to say, that's why Jesus says, remember, you guys remember the story where Jesus says, yeah, give to Caesar what is Caesar's. It says he brought the coin, Mark chapter 12, verse 16. They brought the coin and asked him, whose image is this? This is Jesus talking. Whose inscription? Caesar's, they replied. And then Jesus said to them, give back to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's. And they were amazed at this, at him. That Jesus can say that, but also he can go before Pilate, who's about to sentence him to death. We're wrapping up here. That he can sentence him to death, and Jesus has the audacity to say something like this in John 19. Man, Jesus is gutsy. He says this, you would have no power over me if it were not given you from above. Therefore, the one who handed you over to me, over to you, is guilty of a greater sin. Listen, we submit to authority, we submit to these things, not because we get what we want, not because we're excited, or not even because we think it's fair, but because we submit to the ultimate authority. That's crazy that the Savior who came to redeem these people, to lead them out of exile, what he says is, yeah, give back to the people what's theirs. But know who really is the one running the show behind the scenes of what's going on. And God isn't worried about anything that's happened in the world. I have this quote that I'm going to finish with here. And we'll finish up. It says, the immediate conflict, here's what I want you guys to get from this, the main idea of this text. The immediate conflict is within the Christian believer between the natural impulses towards survival and acceptance in society. But the Christian believer is unlike others that exist in this exile. They have a new life focused on God and the approaching day of Jesus' return. If you find yourself struggling with these things, or whether anything that just reminds you like that we are not in the place that we call home, that we are exiles, man, as we talked last week, that there is hope in the midst of exile. To lay down your frustrations, lay down your need to take control of these things and adopt the way of exile. And hold on to verse 17. Show proper respect to everyone. Love the family of believers, fear God, and honor the emperor. Whenever I talked to the youth on Wednesday, one of the last things that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, is we talked about this faith and following Jesus. It's not a fake faith. It's not like a faith where you're just like, well, I got to make sure I just do these right things and I don't do these things. I got to make sure I put the best fruit forward for people to see. It's not these actions that we try to take. It's not about trying to cover up the bad things. Listen, following Jesus, it's messy. It's scary. And you don't know what direction you're going to go. That even when things are out of control, followers of Jesus are ones that make decisions against their impulses. You can either rebel, and you can always feel this need to push against what's going on, or you just adopt. You surrender, and you just let things take over. But none of those are the way of Jesus. Neither of those are the way of exile. When I told the youth on Wednesday, living in exile, it's all about taking up the middle ground. That there's two sides. And actually, what followers of Jesus need to be proud to take up is the middle. The struggle of knowing both sides. That while you have freedom in Christ to do what you want, that you relinquish that right for the sake of others to know Jesus. Live in the middle. It's messy, it's ugly, it's scary, but that's exactly where Jesus dwells. And that's where he leads his people out of exile. If you close your eyes with me, if you bow your heads, as our community has been really just hit really hard with the pandemic, if there's things that you've been wrestling with or frustrations that you've had, maybe this week, as I said, that being a follower of Jesus, there's struggles, it's hard. Maybe you said things that you wish you didn't. Maybe you acted outside of the character that God has called you to be. Maybe you just feel that because Thanksgiving might look different or things might be changed a little bit, that you might be reminded that you're in exile. Whatever worries you have, whatever things that have just been weighing on your heart, can you surrender that to Jesus this morning? And turn that exile into hope, not by your power, but because that's what Jesus did. As we follow him, we trust in him to be the one that redeems not only us, that we too can participate in the redemption of the world that Jesus does. God, we thank you for this morning, and we know and trust in the power of Jesus as followers. And God, we're living in exile. It's hard, and it's scary. There's a lot of uncertainties, but God, I pray if anything came up from this text, is that God, we have that childlike faith that might sound naive or others might not get it, but God, that's the point. Because it's flipping the world upside down to be what you have made it to be. May we be faithful in leading others to Jesus, that we may lead families, that we might have a great week this week of lives that are surrendered to you, that others can see your glory through our actions, and that we lift you on high no matter what circumstance we face. I pray all these things in Christ's name.